Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Here with me today is Steve Herz. He's president of IF Management. It's a talent agency, a media management and talent agency. It's 20 years old. Steve formed it, founded it, and still runs it 20 years ago. And they represent over 150 broadcasters and major networks, news and sports networks. And as you'll hear in this podcast, Steve does a lot more than just represent people that are talent in his agency. But he actually works to improve their performance, and we're going to talk a lot about this on this podcast. Steve is a friend of mine, so it's a great pleasure for me to have him on the Bregman Leadership Podcast, and I'm excited about this show. Steve, welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me on today.
So, Steve, the idea that I wanted you on this podcast came from a conversation that you and I originally had when I was talking about doing some more television, and you looked at several of my videos, and you gave me some very direct feedback about my voice. You told me that I needed more authority in my voice. And I want to talk about that because it was a moment of clear honesty, courageous communication. And I think it's so important that we do that more often in organizations, and that it's a critical element of leadership, that leaders are able to be, as I have written in an article, helpful more than nice. And you do that incredibly well. Not that you're not nice, but you are incredibly helpful. So I want to explore with you a little bit for you to share kind of what it is that you do, why you do it, and how you do it.
Well, I think that we have always believed as a company, and I believe this, that you're only as good of a salesman as the product that you have. And in the end, we are salesmen, and we're selling individual talent. So it's not any different than selling a widget in some respects. And if the widget is better, the widget is going to sell for more money. You know, a BMW sells for more money than a Buick. And so we try to take our Buicks and turn them into BMWs. And it's not that hard. It's a question of really just giving people, like you said, that honest feedback about what their strengths and weaknesses are. And to the extent that someone has a glaring weakness, if they're 40 pounds overweight, or if they have completely crooked front teeth, or their voice belies any level of authority, I feel like it's our obligation in life to tell them that, because you're doing them such a disservice. It's the Albert Einstein quote of, like, insanity is the definition of doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, we refuse to let people do the same thing over and over again.
And so for you in a talent agency, if someone's 40 pounds overweight or has crooked teeth, that is going to directly impair their capacity to perform the way they want to perform. They're not going to get on television the way that they want to get on television. And however disorienting that may be for us, or however annoying that is, that's just the reality. You're looking at the reality of television, and you're saying, if you have crooked teeth, you are not going to be able to get the kind of position in a major network that you want to get, and it's my obligation to tell you that.
Yes, most likely. Now, for your viewers out there, listeners who play blackjack, it's possible to get 17, and the dealer has a 4, and you still pull a card, and you are really crazy to hit on 17 and you pull a 4. There are exceptions to every rule in life. There are overweight people who go ahead in television. There are people with crooked teeth who do okay. But for the most part, you don't want to be hitting on 17, and you don't want to be going for an aspirational career on television with really crooked teeth or a bad voice.
And so those are the measures, the tools of success in many ways, in your industry. For other industries, it may be other stuff, meaning you don't walk around telling everybody they need to lose weight. It's only if the weight that they're carrying is getting in the way of what they're trying to achieve. It might be someone else that says you're not listening well enough, or you're communicating
exactly
too aggressively, or something like that. In whatever particular arena, you have to understand first, what are the measures of success? Based on what will you be measured? And then how are you doing against those measures?
I think you summed it up perfectly. I mean, of course, I'm not going around telling everybody to go and lose weight or change their teeth. But for those people that, you know, look, I've been doing this job for almost 25 years, so I think I have a pretty good feel for what people are looking for out there. And oftentimes the problem is, and this is sort of the unfortunate part of life, is that people allow people to fail around them because they don't want to offend them. They'd rather see them fail and not reach their potential than offend them. And I think that's really more criminal than hurting someone's feelings.
So what does it take for you, and this may come very naturally for you, so you may not even know the answer, but what does it take to overcome the concern of how you're going to be seen? The, you know, what I call, this is the issue of emotional courage, right? The willingness to feel someone's displeasure maybe and still tell them the truth because that's what's important. What does it take for you? Because I know you do it. You did it with me, and I know that you do it with other people. What does it take to show up and really speak that truth? No matter what.
I got to tell you, if you don't mind, a quick story that when I was probably about 32, 33 years old, after I just started the business 2 or 3 years into it, I went to a place called Miraval, and I learned how to train a horse. And one of the things that you had to do was put the horseshoe, clean the horse's hoofs. And the only way to do that was to saddle up right next to the horse and really be incredibly firm with the horse, but also be very loving at the same time. You had to show the horse that you really cared about the horse, but you also were in charge of the horse at the same time. And if you did that, he would totally give you his hoof, and you could clean it very easily, and you were fine. And if you showed any weakness or any lack of support, the horse would kick you. And I think that really taught me a great lesson for this business and for life, that if my clients know that I truly love them, truly care about them, and that love resonates because I'm really only in it for them, then the criticism doesn't seem harsh at all. It's really, you know, I care about you. That's why I'm telling you that. But if you don't have that sense of support and that sense of caring and love, you can't tell someone to lose weight because it sounds nasty and judgmental and it doesn't sound supportive at all. So I only tell people that I'm working with or I have a deep reservoir of relationship with that I can say it to. And in my case with you, I feel like I was able to be, in some respects, maybe someone might think it was harsh, because you knew I cared about you and you knew we had this relationship to tap into. I think you took it in the spirit in which it was intended. So that's the only way you can do it, in my opinion.
You know, you've said two things here. One, which you've clearly said, right, which is that you have to care about the person if you're going to give them that kind of feedback and you want it accepted. There's another thing that you've said that this a little more subtle, but I think is super important. I was talking to a close friend of mine, Murmur Blakesley, who's a wonderful writer, and she's a writing teacher. And I said, how do you give feedback to people? Writing is very personal. And when someone's writing poorly, how do you give feedback to them in a way that they can accept it and not take it harshly? And she said, it's easy. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about their story. And when what I really want is what they want, which is I want them to come up with the best story. So I'm not worried about their feelings as much as I'm worried about how can we collaborate together to create the best thing out there, the best story. For you, it's the best performance out there when you're trying to get someone to perform. And that's a goal that they want themselves. So if they know that you're committed, not just caring and loving of them, but committed to what they're committed to, then what you say to them is taken in that light.
I think you're 100% right. And I want to add one point to that also, is that, you know, some of these aspects of what we're talking about are very subjective. You know, I'm not an expert on writing, but I have to imagine that one guy likes Steinbeck, another guy likes Hemingway. And there's a certain subjectivity to short sentences, long sentences, whatever it might be, different narrative themes and ways that people write. What I try to do with my clients is only focus on the objective qualities. That if someone doesn't like brunettes or blondes, I don't tell a brunette to change their hair to blonde or vice versa. That's a very subjective thing. But what I think is very objective is body language. Someone who's standing up straight and tall and feels confident and looks good, it's a very objective thing. The resonance in someone's voice is very objective. In general, someone's weight, you know, the difference between being obese and being within the bell curve of a normal weight is very objective. So we stay away from any subjective criteria so that somebody can't say, well, that's just his opinion. He's wrong.
You know, it brings up an interesting question, which is, what if you are wrong? Meaning that, you know, I know because we've talked about a story where you suggested to one of your clients that they change their name. It was a very ethnic sounding name. And in the end, they opted against it, which you liked also, that you didn't have a problem with that. But what if, you know, because I think this is a fear that gets in the way of people sharing their beliefs or sharing their views, is the fear that maybe they're wrong. I don't necessarily want to give this feedback to someone because maybe I'm off. And so I, not only do I have the chance of possibly offending them, but I might be wrong and not helping them at all. And maybe I'm just being a jerk. So how do you get over that hump?
Well, I stay up and don't sleep certain nights, wake up in the middle of the night, keep me awake. That's the number one thing that ever keeps me awake, because two things. One is, if there's one thing that I feel like I've been given as a gift in this world, is that I think I have a great ear and eye for certain communication excellence, you know? And because of that, I don't ever doubt myself that someone's voice isn't the right resonance. I feel like I trust my ear and my eye tremendously well. And when you've been doing this for 25 years and you see that you give, it's almost like you can have a control group, because you do over time. If you give X amount of people certain advice and some people take that advice and then they go on to excellence and achieve, you know, many, if not all, of their career aspirations. And then you have another group of people that say, oh, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. They walk out of your office or they don't do, you know, what you told them to do. And you see them languish professionally. You sort of at the end of the day say, well, I must know what I'm doing here. The other part to answer your question is that as far as changing someone's name, that is a reflection of the marketplace. And some of the advice that I give people is only to the extent I say, look, I've talked to 10 people about you, and they've secretly told me that you're overweight, or they've secretly told me they hate the fact that your teeth are crooked, or they can't even pronounce your name. And 9 out of 10 executives said they would hire you if you changed your name to something more understandable. And in the example you're using, that is what happened. We had several executives say to us, this person would be much more relatable to the audience if she changed her name. And that's, I only gave her that feedback in that context.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So in fact, they might all be wrong, but they're the buyers. And if she wants to sell, then she needs to know that that's what the feedback is. And it's an important element of why we collect feedback at all, that leaders should go around asking, in effect, what other people think, because then it's not about you being right or wrong. It's just about you conveying what other people are saying, and that's data. And that person can choose to do what they want to with the data, either accept it or not, but they need to know that it's data, and not passing on that data does them a disservice.
You are 100% right, and you put your finger on something that really upsets me. I referenced it a little bit earlier, and it's that when you go for a job interview, and I know there's probably all kinds of laws about it now, but I feel like there's such a sad reality of so many people go for these job interviews or they don't even get to this first round. And I'll call the executive up secretly and I'll say, hey, what did you really think about Joe Blow? And I'll say, oh, Joe Blow is pathetic. He came on like way too strong. He seemed very desperate. He wouldn't shut up, or whatever the feedback might be. And then I'll say to Joe Blow, well, did you talk to Executive A? And they'll say, oh, yeah, Executive A loved me. He said I was great, but he just doesn't have anyone. They don't have a budget for that job anymore. And meanwhile, like 2 weeks later, they finally mysteriously got the budget, you know? And so they've really done right. They've done Joe Blow such a disservice. Joe Blow is a great guy. He doesn't know that he has these gigantic egg on his face. And I have to be the one to tell him that.
You know, it makes me realize I'm talking to you, and actually I have your website up, and I see that you have someone on staff, I assume full time, who's an image coach.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder whether every organization should have an image coach, that every organization should have someone whose job it is to look at their executives and look at everybody in the organization to say, how are you presenting yourself? And are you presenting yourself in a way that supports the aims and the goals that you have in terms of how you want to show up? And, you know, I could imagine that some people might find that obtrusive, but I could also imagine that a lot of people would really like that. And in effect, it's a support for someone to say, are you putting your best foot forward? and someone whose job it is to look at you and go, here are some things that you can do to show up more powerfully as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Or more relatable as a person. Or, you know, it's not just powerfully, it could be more vulnerable, which is important at certain moments. And look, I look at people are like products. And I don't say that in a kind of a way that's dismissive. But at the end of the day, we are like products. And it's not the best people don't always win. In fact, the best people don't usually win. It's the people that are able to best express themselves. And in these multiple media, it's the way you dress, the way you stand. It's the quality of your voice, the way you look. It's so many different things. If you're not going to at least have some level of awareness of all that, then you're really missing the boat. And if you're looking in the mirror and you're not seeing what everyone else is seeing in a constructive way, then you're putting yourself at great disadvantage. So we feel like we brought Shari on about a year ago. Shari Gross is the image consultant, and she's been a tremendous help for us. And not all of our clients have participated in it, but the ones that have got great results.
Great. I'm going to tap you for her later on after we talk on the show.
Absolutely.
Steve, you and I have talked about three elements that you use, a way of a framework that you use both for helping people be more successful as talent in media and also in general that, you know, we've talked about the importance of this for leaders as well. And those three elements are authority, warmth, and energy. And you use the acronym of AWE, authority, warmth, and energy. Can you talk about each one a little bit?
Sure. Well, I think authority is somewhat self-explanatory. Do you believe what I'm saying? Do you have credibility about yourself? And I believe a large part of authority is one's body language. It is one's sense of voice and presentation. And I don't believe in a one-size-fits-all mentality. And one can have authority about him or herself in many different forms of functions and packages. So just one quick example is that I tend to be a very boisterous, kind of very talkative, someone say loud person with, you know, just a lot of energy about myself. And I do think that I come across with a good level of authority. Now, I've been working with one of my closest colleagues for the last 16 years, Carol Perry. You could not find a more understated, low-key person with a very quiet demeanor about herself. But she has tremendous authority. She has a very steely gaze. People know her. They trust her. You can take her word to the bank to the last nickel. And she has unbelievable reservoir of trust for people. And all that leads to someone's great authority. So however you come across your own comfort level of what brings you authority in yourself, that's what I think is important. Now, I do think you have to have certain underlying objective qualities to bring that I think Carol has and that I have. She sits up straight. She's in great shape. She has a good voice about herself. You know, her body language belies a great confidence. So she has a good voice. Like I said earlier, those things have to be present. But they don't have to be the same for everybody to have authority, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there are some elements of it. It sounds like comfort in your body, but it also sounds like holding yourself upright. What are some other elements that if people are listening and they're thinking, I want to assess a little bit my own authority, and I also want to, you know, kind of support my ability to show up with authority. What are some pieces of advice you might give them?
I think that the most important thing is to be able to sell yourself on you. And that's why it doesn't matter whether you're loud or you're quiet. It depends on who you are. Somebody once said that the weakest guy in the room is the loudest guy. That can often be the case. The bottom line is that I think you have to really be a true believer in what you're saying. And I think if your voice and your body both align with that message, whatever the message is, then you will have authority about yourself.
Can you have authority and be uncertain, be open to uncertainty? You know, that's the vulnerability piece. Could you be vulnerable and still have authority? Because you may not be 100% sure of something.
1,000%, I think you can. I think you can't be too vulnerable and too... I think sometimes if you're too authoritative, you sound like you're a little too arrogant, and people can sometimes see through that. But if you're too vulnerable, you know, life shouldn't be like a therapy session. You should never reveal yourself to people, especially those that you don't know that well. So I think that's part of it too. But if you,
you know, I've often talked about the difference between confidence and arrogance. And the way I describe that is arrogance is about me thinking I'm better than you. Confidence is me thinking I'm great, and I think you could be great also. And so
absolutely,
it sounds like the authority piece comes with confidence, but too much of that may come off as arrogance.
Correct. I think you're 100% right. That is exactly how I would say it. And I think also one of the things, you're tapping into something that we try to tell our clients, which is that in reality of life, is that you do often think that you're competing against everybody else in this world. But you're really not. The person you're competing against the most is yourself. If you can figure out how to be your best self, and I know that's a little hokey maybe to certain people, but if you can figure out how to be your best self, you're going to be very successful. You're going to achieve greatness in whatever it is that you are. And most of the reason people don't succeed to the extent that they're capable of isn't because somebody else boxed them out of something. It's because they themselves didn't work hard enough or didn't realize their potential. They didn't work smart enough, whatever it might be. It's not because of someone else.
You know, I just spoke with Hal Hirschfield, who's assistant marketing professor at UCLA School of Anderson, the business school. And he, in one of the pieces of research he did, asked 1,000 people who their biggest enemy was. And 50, they were given choices. It was multiple choice, but 50% of them said themselves. So it kind of coincides with what you're saying, that half of the people surveyed are basically saying, I'm my own worst enemy.
Right. I feel bad for the other 50%.
Tell me about warmth. So we have authority, warmth, and energy. Tell me about warmth.
I think warmth is the way that you kind of allow yourself to be vulnerable in these certain spots. I think vulnerability is very connected to both warmth and authority. I think it's your body language. You know, I always say, like, one of the greatest people, I always use an example of warmth, is Al Roker. He's a guy that you just feel like you know. He lets you in, and it's very subtle. I think you, Peter Bregman, a very warm guy. Everyone would say that about you. I tell my clients all the time, if you want to practice warmth, go around hugging everybody without being inappropriate about it. The more physicality you show, the more eye contact you make, the more smiling you do, those qualities bring about a sense of warmth. I think it's what you want to do, and I'm, you know, part of this is something that Amy Cuddy said, who I'm a big fan of. She said, don't fake it till you make it. Fake it till you are it. If you are the person who never hugs anybody and you never smile, and you go around for 3 months hugging in everybody you can, embracing everybody you can find, and being physically open to them, and smiling at everybody, you're going to become a warm person. You're not going to be faking it anymore. You are a warm person at the end of that period if you just keep doing it. So that's a huge part of it. Nobody wants to be around someone they don't feel connected to. And as like, I'm probably like a loser in this regard, because this is what I do in my spare time. I try to study warmth. And I went back recently and started looking at old tapes of Ronald Reagan and Al Gore versus George Bush. And putting aside whatever one's political views might be, I think if you lined up 100 people in a room who had no political affiliation, 99 out of 100 would look at George Bush's body language and say it was much warmer than Al Gore's.
And if you worried that that was a political statement, you could look at Bill Clinton, who has tremendous warmth as well.
Absolutely. Off the charts. I mean, they used to sort of make fun of him for that double-fisted handshake, but that's a point of connectivity.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I could think of people in my life who don't have authority, and that seems like an easier thing to tell them than someone in my life who doesn't have warmth. I could think of people I know who I work with who, you know, are clients that don't necessarily have warmth. And it feels like that's a harder message to convey to someone, especially if they haven't necessarily asked you to, but you see that it's getting in their way. How do you approach that?
I think that, you know, under the umbrella of when people become clients of ours, there is a reputation that we have for being brutally honest and trying to give them constructive feedback to help them get better at their craft. So like we said earlier, they'll reach their own goals. They know that before they sign on or when they sign on. And we talk about it often with them before they even sign on. We'll say to them, look, you have a very stiff way about yourself. You're not really connecting with people. This is what we feel. and here are the specific tips that we would give you in order to improve that. And look, some people don't like that. Either they're not open to that message, or they disagree with you, or they can't stand you after you say that to them, and then they won't sign on with you. So you try to be upfront with them from the beginning. But again, when they know that you care about them, and why would you ever tell someone to go around hugging everybody you know? What would that do for you? All you're doing is trying to help them. And if they know that that's really what you're all about, or what you're really, your focus is only for them, I think they take it in the spirit in which it's intended.
Right. That feels really important, that they are open to the conversation and that you are caring and doing it for all the right reasons.
Right. And you also learn how to read people. You know, at a certain point, if you think that someone was, like, unfortunately, like, abused or something, and they just have tremendous psychological issues that they really are almost too afraid to open up at all, you may not say that to them. You tread very lightly around that.
Right. I think just the warmth one is very interesting, because by definition, if someone lacks warmth, it's going to be harder to have that personal conversation with them than if they lack authority and they are warm, because warmth invites personal conversations, whereas lack of warmth kind of repels them to a certain degree. So it seems like it's a higher bar to get over in order to, you know, have that direct conversation with someone who maybe is lacking some warmth.
You might be right. If I can just say one last quick thing on that.
Yeah.
So what I find really fascinating, and I have over the years, that whether it's warmth or authority, that people that you think it should be so abundantly obvious to them that this is like the most glaring weakness that everybody on earth has probably said it behind their back for 30 years. When you tell them, oh, you know, you really should go hugging people, they're like, really? I've never, ever heard that before.
It's very interesting. I mean, it's the definition of a blind spot. And we do a leadership training. And in our leadership training, it's kind of amazing, because it's an amazing place to uncover blind spots. And you've got all these people around the room. You've got, you know, 15, 19 people around the room. And they all see something. And they see something in someone. And the person is looking around. And they have no idea. And it's so obvious to everybody else in the room. And one of the things that we do in the leadership training is we share really direct, honest feedback with each other, which is hard for people to do. It's one of the ways in which we develop emotional courage. But what's always amazing is what is so obvious to the 19 other people in the room is a complete blind spot to the person that they're seeing it in. And that's the gift of feedback. I mean, that's why feedback, I think, is such a gift.
Right.
Talk, Steve, if you would, about energy.
Energy is, you know, pretty simple to describe. It should be the easiest thing to fix. I think it's the pace of your speech often. It's the volume that you speak at. It's obviously related to your body language at certain points. If you could be a little more gesticulative, if you will, with a little more forceful about what you say. It's the kind of sense of urgency you bring to a message. And I think those are things that are pretty easy to fix. And you know, look, you don't want to be, not everybody can go through life talking like John Madden or Dick Vitale, and maybe that wouldn't work for anyone, for everybody. But generally speaking, when you're wanting to be on television, you want to speak with a lot of energy. Like, you know, and I always think there are certain people out there that have been successful. There's a local sportscaster here named Len Berman, and I said he had very sneaky energy. And the same is true for, you know, a lot of other people that you wouldn't think, oh, that guy's really energetic. But if you really kind of look at it, they actually are very energetic.
You know, and the conversation about energy is interesting, because I have found in my work that people put out different kinds of energy. It's not just, are you energetic or are you not? But it's also the kind of energy that you put out. Do you put not just sleepy energy? Do you put out sneaky energy? Do you put out trustworthy energy? Do you, what is it that you're conveying in your energy, and how is that coming across to other people?
I think you're 100% right. And what I have sort of tried to tell people over the years is, you know, all these things are interrelated to each other. But one of the things that I've been imparting to people is inflection in your voice. I always say inflection is infection. If you inflect with your voice, you infect the listener with the energy that you feel. And if you don't inflect and impart that energy upon someone else, they're not going to want to be engaged with you. So that's the whole goal of energy, whether it's, you know, and look, it could be, you know, high energy mixed with low energy. It could be, you know, high volume. It should be high volume mixed with low volume, fast pace with short pace. everything is the ability to kind of vary those elements. But if you do that in an effective way, you are going to suck that person in to your message. And that's what you want. If you're a television personality or if you're a salesman, what do you want the person to do when they turn on the TV is not change the channel. And if you're trying to pitch somebody, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you walk up to someone's door, what you want them to do is not slam the door on them. It's quite simple.
That's great. Steve Herz, he is the president of IF Management. It's a talent media management agency. They've got over 150 broadcasters in major markets, both news and sports. Steve, it's such a pleasure to hear your perspective. The way you manage talent is a lesson for many of us as leaders and organizations of how we need to manage both our own talent and the talent of the people around us. So I really appreciate you coming on to the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Peter. It was amazing. Thanks so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.